Yo, what up? Welcome to another episode of the Oakland Warriors podcast. I'm Patrick, and we're actually doing something different for the first time. I'm going live if you're on YouTube or whatever. This is streaming on the Oakland Warriors podcast YouTube channel. And today I am joined for the second time by Chris Madrigal from the Town Tailgate podcast. A lot of thoughts on the A's, but welcome back, man. How you doing?
Yeah, and you can like see some of my like A's memorabilia behind me, and it's just like we don't have to get into that. This is we're talking Warriors now, man. Let's stick to that. Yeah. Subject. No, yeah, I'm pumped. Thanks for bringing me back. Season's been a roller coaster, but I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah. So first, like it's been a minute since I put out.
Oh, this is my first time going live, by the way. Ever.
Oh yeah. Well, welcome to the club. This is like my second time. and like I told you, hopefully this goes well. So I don't have to edit anything when I put it on audio, but, a lot of stuff has happened in the past week. I haven't put an episode out and, you know, like you said, a lot of ups and downs. I mean, first and foremost, how worried are you about the Warriors right now? They lost six in a row. They just beat the Rockets. And people are trying to hype that up, but like, you know, they started off strong, had that rough patch. How worried are you about this team?
I don't understand the freakouts from like Warriors Nation. Like they lose, a handful of games in a row, which it can be scary when you first look at it, but like if you have to look at the circumstances of some of these losses. That's kind of the way I see it. Like the Nugget. Okay. So on the 8th, on November 8th, we lost to the Nuggets by 3 points. Like that's the best team in the NBA, hands down. It's either them or the Timberwolves this season based on like strictly what we've seen play wise. I'm not talking about like hype. I'm not talking about like off season, rankings. I'm talking about personnel. I'm talking about what we've seen on the court from the NBA this season. The Nuggets are the best team in the NBA, and you can make a strong case for the Timberwolves for second, but the Nuggets have been more consistent. After that, loss to the Cavs, which was, a tough loss. I think you could argue that we were a little bit beat up from the loss to the Nuggets. Like, we kind of put everything we had on the court in that loss, and without Draymond also in that loss to the Nuggets. So like, just a little bit up. Lost in Timberwolves by 6 points on the 12th. So that was a back-to-back. A little bit tougher. Also second best team in the NBA. And then we lost the Timberwolves again in that play-in game, which that was the game that Klay and Draymond got kicked out of the game. So we had no Steph, who still had the knee injury. We had no Klay because him and Draymond got kicked out 2 minutes in the game. And Chris Paul... That game proved everything you needed to. I needed from Chris Paul. He literally put the team on his back. He willed that team to a very close loss, which was almost a win. I think they lost in the last possession of the game with none of the three Hall of Famers. Like that just said a lot about him, his leadership, his impact on the other players of the team. Because I think there's like three guys or four guys with double digit points in that game besides him. Like so. For me, you just have to look at the circumstances of these losses. You can't just like see the win and loss record and freaked out. Like that doesn't make any sense to me. And if you're doing that, you're not watching this team closely enough, which I get it. We're in football season. You're not watching every single game. But if you watch the game, it's hard to be upset and frustrated with this team. That's just my opinion. I know you have a different opinion on it, but yeah.
I mean, to me, like I can honestly say that watching them last week during that losing streak, a lot of it was just bad product on the court.
That OKC loss on Saturday, a couple Friday. Days before that one was a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, it is something where you just look at it and you're like, okay, I'm not really watching this that closely. You get where that game's going, you see the trends and all that stuff, and you're like, okay, write it off. But like, I mean, in our conversations, and I talk about this all the time, it's like, it's a long season. And yeah, like sometimes it's not fun to watch if they're getting shellacked or if they just look old and whatnot. But at the end of the day, we know what this team needs to do. They're trying to win 16 games in the springtime, right? Springtime into the summer. So, it's a process. And that's part of, sometimes you look at this team, you can look at fandom a certain way, right? It's like you live and die with each and every game, or you look at the bigger picture, and that's how I tend to look at things. Are they perfect? No, definitely not. Are there flaws? Yeah, there's definitely flaws. One thing that I'd wanted to see after that promising 6-2 start or whatever was how they would look against some of the quote unquote better teams, right? And the Nuggets, you know, they did pretty well. That was impressive to me. And then they literally, having played the Cavs before that, they literally ran into three teams that are probably the worst kind of matchup for them right now. Teams that are
big,
super talented, long, skilled, unafraid. And that's what you got with Cleveland. That's what you got with Minnesota, who I give props to Minnesota, man, because I thought they were going to fall apart. Anthony Edwards, he got that Team USA bump that you always see from certain guys. And then OKC, right? Like, so, and the Warriors were down a couple guys. So it may not have been fun to watch, but, yeah, I keep saying, like, let's see with 20 games. What is it now? Like 15 games or something? 14?
Yeah, we're approaching the quarterway point, which quarterway is 18 games. I think we're at 15. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's still a ways to go, obviously. But in terms of panicking, like I'm not going to freak out. It sucks to lose six in a row, but I'm the same way. I'm not going to celebrate win over the Rockets. You know what I mean?
But to be fair, the Rockets are playing really well this year, though. You know, like, I mean, like, I get it. It's only barely a quarter of the way through the season, but the Rockets are playing, and we have had no like relief in this schedule. Like, we haven't played the Jazz really. Haven't played the Pistons. Like, we haven't played any of those lower tier teams. So like really like rack up the wins and get those confidence wins to like help the team like rally and like kind of move forward from there. So like, I don't know, maybe, I guess you could make the argument, we'll see what the Rockets do by the end of the season. But like right now they're playing well. So like, I don't give last night's win one of those like beat up on the crappy teams, like get some confidence wins, you know?
Oh no, they're definitely good. I actually like them. And yeah. Sengun is one of those guys who's turning into the dude that we were like, oh man, maybe the Warriors should pick that guy.
Yeah.
And Udoka's doing a really good job. They were coming off like a back-to-back or whatever, but you know, I mean, what are your biggest concerns about this team? And like, how concerned are you about Clay and Andrew Wiggins?
I mean, okay, so Andrew Wiggins' deal, I'm gonna start with him because I have more issues with Clay. Andrew Wiggins' deal is like, Logan Murdock put out this great piece on the Ringer beginning of the season. It was like a profile piece on Chris Paul and the Warriors and the reasons for their like adding him to the team this offseason. And in that piece, he talked about like the Warriors, how they handled, you know, the personnel coming into camp and like what they saw from the team in training camp. And Andrew Wiggins came into camp out of shape. And that was like very disappointing for them because, you know, everything that happened last season, I'm not going to speculate the reasons why he left. I've heard some rumors, and if the rumors are true, that's unfortunate. Totally get why he would step away from the team. But his, like, you know, him coming into camp this offseason or this season is like a big issue because he was hands down the Warriors' number two guy in that championship run in 2022. And like, I wrote a piece for Fans First today, and it came up, went up 30 minutes ago at 12 o'clock. So you can go check that out. Anybody who's watching or listening, it's on the homepage. It's the Warriors' second best player rankings, because like right now coming in the season, like you expected Wiggins to be that person, that job belongs to him as the Warriors' second best player. I think that Clay is just on the downward trajectory of his career. That wasn't going to happen. Draymond Green, he's kind of a one tool pony, plays a lot of defense, maybe has some presence in the post, probably not. But like, it's just not those two guys anymore. You kind of need Wiggins to be that person. And for him to come into camp out of shape, it's just like, it's just disappointing. And now we don't really know who that second best player is. Like, we don't know who Steph doesn't have his, like his sidekick to rely on to, you know, when other guys aren't playing well, or if he's being, you know, double covered, which is like almost every single game, it feels like that he can dish to this guy and this guy's going to put up 20 points and you can rely on him. So like, the Wiggins thing is disappointing, but he's going to play himself in the shape. I think we saw a version of that on Saturday when he put up 30 points. He looks a lot better. Looked a lot better last night against the Rockets. So, like, he'll get in the shape. he'll be better. He'll attack the glass like he does. He'll do his amazing cutting and slashing the hoop. The three-point shooting is a concern. He's at like 22%. Hopefully that goes up as well. That might just be exhaustion. You know, he's taking these shots when he doesn't want to make any moves to the hoop. The Klay Thompson thing is like, man, as like a diehard Warriors fan, it's just like depressing to watch, because like you heard the rumors about like how him and his agent are very far apart from Dunleavy in the front office on a contract, because he's in a contract year, and him not playing well in a contract year. It's just like, I don't know what you do with him moving forward. Like, I have a Warriors group chat. I'm sure you do too. We were talking about it last night when he was struggling in the first quarter. He played way better last night. It was great, but he's struggling in the first quarter and Moody was playing really well. And we were like, man, like maybe they should move Moody to the starting lineup and put Klay in the, like on the bench, have him like just have them swap those roles. Cause like even Moody's defense has been so good. So like, shouldn't you reward him for that? Like, I don't know. It's just like, it's such a weird situation. Like, I guess it has to play out more. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see Kerr doing that anytime soon. It would have to be like disastrous, because I was talking to somebody about this yesterday. It's like, I love loyalty. I love Kerr's loyalty, all that stuff, but he's overly loyal to some of these guys.
Yeah.
To the expense of developing guys like Moody and Kuminga. And, you know, one thing I thought of actually to go back to those teams that they lost six games in a row to, it's like the Warriors do have, you know, Kuminga and Moody as young guys. This is their third year. And then when you see them in contrast to some of these young guys on OKC, Cleveland, whatnot, like they're not way less talented than any of those dudes. It's just that they've been allowed to develop. And the thing that bugs me a little bit is that in that their first year, right? Like, yeah, they won a title, and so limited time for those kids. But then last season was such a lost season that the fact that you could not win and you could not even develop those guys even more, and that, you know, Moody didn't play in the regular season, plays in the playoffs. Kuminga plays in the regular season, and he also shines when Wiggins is out and loses his minutes when Wiggins and Gary Payton come back and get healthy, get in the lineup. And then the big deal is that Kuminga like pouts or something like that. I don't really care about that. If you're competitive, you're going to pout. You know, imagine Draymond in that situation when he was younger, whatever. So, you know, to me, looking at Klay, I mean, it's telling, because when he got hurt with the ACL in 2019, that dude to me was really, really developing his all around game, going to the basket.
Totally.
Having all these moves and whatnot. He was like, to me, he was turning into like a Paul George-esque player in a way. Obviously better shooter, you know, Paul George has a better, 3-point line in game, but, he was developing that. And then what he's been trying to do, it feels like just capture the past. And it seems like he hasn't adjusted to his aging. I don't know what other parts of his game he could develop, but like, obviously Steph has, you know what I mean? And Klay hasn't, and seeing him get guarded by those Thunder players, it's like, whoa, man, this guy has no breathing room. So I do wonder if his where his path takes him, if he starts draining shots and becoming the guy that, like, you know, led the league in three pointers, although he was chucking a lot last year because he had to, you know, where's that going to go? I don't see him going to the bench anytime soon, but it sucks to have two of their starters really, really like playing mediocre basketball, you know what I mean?
And I don't see it happening at all. It was just kind of one of those conversations where it's like, I don't, like, how do we fix you, dude? Because like, we don't want you to like be a lost cause in this, like, this weird season that's happening so far, and this team that's like developing and changing to very different than what it was 8 years ago when this run hole started. So like, it, you know, it's that, and also like, how much restriction is he still having to his repaired ligament? Like, is that part of it? You could see it in his lateral movements. He's not as quick like that anymore, which is why his defense has gone down a little bit. But like, yeah, I, you know, Let's just hope that last night was a good sign for that, because if he can score like that, and I think a big part of it is having Steph back in the lineup as well as Chris Paul, because like those guys just know how to find him. So man, I don't know how to feel about him right now.
Yeah, it could also just be one of those things where it's like, oh, Clay's starting off slow and then he'll pick it up. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then all the hand-wringing and all the hypothesizing will go away once they're like 20 games over 500 or something like that, you know? Mm-hmm. But the Wiggins stuff, it's like, you know, that dude is still in his late 20s. He's still in his prime. Yeah. It is disappointing that he is out of shape. I don't know what the reason could or maybe, but I think that was Clay last year, right? Clay had the terrible start.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole team had a terrible start, but like individually. And, you know, I keep saying, and I guess it gets kind of boring at some point when you just say, well, I expect these guys to gravitate towards the mean for each of them. And even if they're a few ticks below their career averages, then that's still in a good spot, you know? And I'm enjoying seeing Chris Paul mix it up with these guys. It's just fun to see a dude like that. And like you said, with him and Clay, that's something that I've talked about before. It's like, oh, wow, Clay, you know, in that when he comes in with the second unit or gets subbed back in, and seeing Chris Paul and Clay, I start imagining like, oh, what kind of backcourt would that have been if Clay had his own team in some past history, some other multiverse universe, and he had like a true pure point guard, you know, and running Reggie Miller, you know, screens with like a Mark Jackson type guy.
The Kevin Love trade ends up happening and Minnesota trades him to like the Clippers, and then it's like, oh, we got this world where this backcourt is Clay Thompson and Chris Paul, and we got Blake Griffin. Like, who knows the possibilities there? Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, and we got this comment from Amar Singh, who's a frequent commenter on the YouTube channel. He says, you know, reminding us of Clay started off terribly last year too. So it's like, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. That's what we hope for. But also, like, the difference is like getting older and whether or not he can do it in time, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like a lot of these folks that follow this podcast, they know that it's a long, slow burn towards the end of the season. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. Let me ask you, when you watch this team lose six in a row to some of these more athletic teams, like, do you think it was just bad matchups, or do you think like those teams are just that good? You know what I mean?
You know, with the Nuggets, it's tough because like our biggest issue is that we're undersized. We have we really only have one true center on our roster, and that's Dario Saric. Like, Kevon Looney was moved to a center, and you know, because he had some injuries in college and his movement wasn't quite there, so he got bulky, he got bigger. He's only 6'9", so he's not like really like the center built, but he's changed into a center, and that's kind of it. You know, like Trayce Jackson-Davis played power forward in college. He can play the five because that's just his game, but like, so like going up against Jokic is just always going to be tough because we're undersized, and that's a lot of minutes on Saric. It's a lot of minutes on Looney. And when Looney plays, you lose some offensive help. So it's just kind of a weird back and forth. With the Timberwolves, it's unfortunate we saw three games against them already, because I really think that we match up pretty well with them because we can run on them. And we didn't get the chance to do that in a couple of our games. One of them obviously was a suspension, and the other one was we didn't have Steph. But yeah, and then, you know, I mean, OKC's just younger. They're just going to be more athletic, and they're just going to move around. And I think we played pretty well against them considering the facts. But like, there's the only teams that in probably all of the NBA that I really worry about our matchups, because like last year, the big issue was like guard defense. Like with Clay not being what he was anymore, we kind of really only had one player to like defend the perimeter, and that was Wiggins. Like that was reliable, and that was Wiggins. And Wiggins like We all know the story about Wiggins with last year. But this year, like, Chris Paul is, like, having an insane – he always plays pretty well defensively, but he's having, like, a really good defensive efficient season. He's – his plus-minus is – defensive plus-minus is 1.7. Like, that's above his last three seasons average. And then Moody, dude. Moody has the third highest plus-minus – defensive plus-minus on the team. He has been a defensive juggernaut on the perimeter. And, like, that is going so unnoticed. I can't believe that Warriors Twitter is not talking about that more. So I think with that, you know, I'm not worried about Boston as much. I'm not worried about Milwaukee as much because we got guys who can defend Dame, who can defend Jalen, who can defend, you know, the guys that they have on those teams. It's really just the Nuggets, man. It's just the Nuggets and worrying about Jokic, you know, at least off the top of my head. We can probably go through more, but, like, just I if we play the Nuggets in the playoffs again, like, that's like a 7-game series is gonna be concerning to me.
Yeah. I mean, the Bucks do concern me just because I mean, watching those games last year where they had Giannis, Lopez, and Portis, it was just like the Warriors couldn't get anywhere.
Yeah,
into the paint, they couldn't get any rebounds. Watching Portis on Kuminga was tough. I was like, dang, because Portis is like that dude's a man, you know, he plays like it too. But you know, for me, like, I think those games were like matchup issues. And I mean, here's the thing, those guys are always going to be coming for the king. And all that I'll say is we'll see where some of those teams are in April. You know, we'll see. Yeah. Like, every team has some kind of injury or dysfunction or runs into a lapse and whatnot. And it's just an unfortunate quirk of the schedule that they got Cleveland twice in 1 week, Minnesota back to back, and then OKC back to back without Draymond and without.
And the Nuggets in the middle of all that. Yeah.
Exactly. Because right now, I do think that the Warriors are more built for the old head teams that they expect to be at the top of the West, like the Clippers, the Lakers, the Suns. You know what I mean? That's who they are preparing for. So when they get these 19-year-olds who are all ready to show out and prove on the national stage, like, we're here and they got all this energy and everything is on the table for them in every single game of the season, then they put out an excellent effort. But we'll see. I still don't believe in Gobert. I don't believe in Cat.
No. I mean, so, especially with that team, like, Cat is such a defensive liability. Like, you can just attack him. You could put Sarge in there, who's a great scorer, and just attack, get him into foul trouble. You know, like, they always will have that weakness on their team. But, like, the schedule, like, it's interesting because it doesn't lighten up too much. You know, we have the Suns on Wednesday, and then we have the Spurs on Friday. That's our only relief. And then it's the Kings and the Clippers. You could say what you want about the Clippers, but they are still have some good players. We play them 3 times in like the next month, and then the Suns. So, like, we don't get some relief until the Nets and on the 16th. Like, it's just the schedule is brutal, dude.
Yeah. So you talked about, like, oh, maybe Moody going in the starting line. And you really don't think that's going to happen, but do you think there should be any adjustments to the starting lineup at this point right now? I know Saric has started a few times, but, like, is there anything that you would want to see? Because we have people in the comments saying, this is Daryl Haynes saying start Kuminga. I don't know if that's
no. I mean, that's a terrible idea. Yeah. So I
love Kuminga, but yeah,
I get where he's coming from though, like, because the athleticism is off the charts. But I talk about it in my piece. I think that if readers check it out, they'll be a little bit surprised of three of the.
What's
top
the website
five.
Name again? What's the URL?
FansFirstSports.com. Oh, I mean the actual piece. I don't know, it just got put up, but it's on the homepage.
Just the website, because
yeah, fansfirstsports.com. I think they'll be pretty surprised at three of the top five, and I give reasons why they are up there. But Kuminga's big issue is, like, he's great offensively this year, and he is efficient too. He's not just, like, because he's getting more minutes and able to put up more shots in that second unit that he scored more points. No, he's shooting at a high efficiency. especially in the field from the field. And his like per 36 has been is showing it. That's that kind of is a better metric of showing how efficient you are as a player as opposed to your just regular per game. But his defensive numbers are bad. He, you know, he makes some good plays every once in a while, and those highlight plays where he gets those swats out of nowhere, those like almost feels like Wemby style slots where he just comes out of nowhere with the chase down blocks. But like in terms of like overall defensive like play, he is having the same issue that he had last year, and he's getting better game by game, I will say. But he's having the same issues that he had last 2 years. He gets lost, he gets confused, he's in the wrong position and gives up like big plays and big baskets. Every time he does that, though, what I'm loving about what I'm seeing from him this season is Chris Paul. They come out of timeout, Chris Paul puts his arm around him, talks to him, and the next play, he's better. He's playing better. On top of that, when he's on the bench, he sits right next to Chris, and they're like talking about it and they're going through it. So like the leadership, I think, is going to help him. Do I think he's ready for the starting lineup? Absolutely not. I love his athleticism in the second unit. So like, you know, we have that athleticism in Wiggins in the starting lineup. We kind of need a replica of that in the second unit, and that's kind of what Kuminga does, which is great. I don't know. I really like that second lineup of Chris Paul, Moody, Kuminga, Saric, and it's been a mixture of GP2, but also pods a lot lately. And I really like mm-hmm. that. And if you look at their like advanced numbers of that lineup together, they're like plus, I want to say they're over plus 10. I haven't checked it in the last few days. It might be a little bit lower, but like they're really good and they're really efficient. And especially with pods is shooting, like, man, that guy, I talk about it in that piece. You know, he is the perfect replacement for Dante DiVincenzo. And not just because he looks like DiVincenzo, but like his style of play. He's not a super athletic player, but he's a great spot up shooter. And he's actually a good shooter off the dribble too, which is what DiVincenzo wasn't as much. He's an amazing rebounder, and has a high basketball IQ. So defensively, he's just on it. He knows exactly where to go and where to be. So like, I've been really like kind of impressed by pods lately. Maybe a few months from now, I'm going to be making the pitch for him to move the starting lineup in place of like Clay or something. But no, I think the starting lineup's fine now. I like the way Steve Kerr has mixed up the rotations a little bit, and he's really found something out of some guys and some combinations. So no, I don't know. Do you, is there anything like glaring to you that you.
No, because that's the benefit, perhaps privilege of being a dynasty team, is you know the cadence of a season. You're not like panicking because you know it's a bad losing streak. Yeah, no one wants to see that, but it's not like you know if this were the Timberwolves going on a 6-game losing streak, they haven't proven anything, and they have bad history and bad mojo, so that would be a greater panic to me. I don't think Kerr would make a massive change to the lineup, you know, Saric or Looney, whatever. But until like things started really, really going into the tank, someone could argue that, hey, losing 6 in a row, that's not in the tank, but it's the beginning of the season and guys are out, funky things have happened, schedule's kind of weird. So I don't necessarily think so. And right, like it's like the best 5-man unit last mm-hmm. season. Are you going to bail on that in less than 20 games?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. And they really, really need to develop that second unit chemistry. And from the very outset of the season, that's what I'm excited to see. We know like a 5-man starting unit, like, yes, they haven't played well, but not that I'm bored with them, but like, I'm always looking to see how these units evolve. And I'm excited by that second group for the most part. So I don't necessarily think so, but we'll see, because they're playing some teams that they are better matched up with, and then they get Draymond back. I don't know how long Peyton's out for, but like, okay, then we'll see if they can get back into the rhythm mm-hmm. that they were in before, right? Like they have I was gonna say like they're playing the Suns and Phoenix, then they play the Spurs at home, and then at Sac. If they go 2-1 in that, All right.
That's cool. Great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would. Yeah. That, you know what I mean? That's, in my opinion, that's like the perfect scenario. Obviously, 3-0 would be better, but like, I don't think that's very realistic. Like, yeah. Especially with, with De'Aaron Fox back, like, they look like a completely different team with him back. It's insane how much impact that dude has on that team.
Exactly. And the reason why they match up with the Warriors match up with Sac better is because, you know, they match up better with Sabonis in their front line than they do with Chet Holmgren or Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. So, you know, that will be telling. If they go 1-2, then I think like people start chirping a little bit more and we're getting close to the quarter season mark. But I'll be happy with 2-1. I'm going to read some of these comments. Can you see these on your end?
I don't know. I don't know how.
Never mind. But let's see. No need to start Kuminga. Wiggins is getting his game back. I do agree with that.
Yeah.
Kerr needs to change his ways. This is from Sid. Change his ways to manage the team. He can't be in 2015, 16, 17 mode.
Oh, yeah. I can't see him. Sorry.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, I tend to agree that we talked about how Kerr is a little too loyal at some point. And I was talking to my buddy JP about this morning, how he was saying, like, you know, he's not really that. He doesn't think Kerr's that great of a coach. But Kerr's more of like a manager. He's a Phil Jackson-style manager, and he came with schemes of how to take Steph and the team's talents. He's not the best in-game adjustments guy. He's like, all right, we're just going to stick with what we know. He's going to be like, Steph is the best player on the court. We're going to ride his talents and his magic until the end. But
I think, like you said, that's his style of coaching, where it's like, when he does make those in-game adjustments, like, they stand out and you're like, oh damn, like, I've seen him win games on those, and like going against his like stubborn mentality of like, no, we're gonna stick with what we know. Like, I think, like, sometimes he goes in the locker room at halftime and like Kenny Atkinson just throws in like all these numbers and evidence of like why we need to change it up to this, and then he does, and then it's like, oh shit, we just won this game based off of that. But like, yeah, you're right, he totally I would say it's more stubbornness than it is like he's just not good at making those in-game adjustments.
Right. Yeah. Maybe. But
I guess we don't actually know. We're not sitting on the bench with him, but yeah. Yeah,
this is he's not coming on the show anytime soon. What do you make of, gosh, I hate to even give this kind of stuff credence sometimes, but like some of these lesser sports sites or, you know, chatter about, you know, I think the phrase I keep seeing is the Warriors at a breaking point with Jonathan Kuminga. What are your thoughts on trading him and any of this kind of chatter that always comes up? It's always like with Toronto or somebody else.
For like what, Ananobi?
And Nobi, Pascal Siakam,
packaging. I love Warriors Nation, but like one issue that I have with our fan base, especially on Twitter, and I have two people in my group chat that are like this as well, so it's not just, it's all of Warriors fans, is like the unrealistic trades that people make. Like, like last year, like every Ananobi trade that I saw, it was just like, dude, if you're Toronto, why in the absolute hell would you do that trade? You don't get half as much out of that as you do, oh, well, this person's young. Well, they get younger and they get picks. Okay, well, you have to do, like, there needs to be, like, some form of evidence behind that. So, like, I mean, to get Ananobi, who I think he just re-signed a contract and everything too, like, I mean, that would be, Kuminga wouldn't be enough. I mean, so you know, like, what else are we giving up to do to make that one? I think like a realistic trade that entices me, but like, I'm not there because I do genuinely like Kuminga, and like, I encourage listeners to go look at his numbers compared to the last two seasons to now. He's dramatically improved, especially offensively. A trade for Malcolm Brogdon. Up in Portland, Malcolm Brogdon would have an immediate impact on this team in second unit, especially offensively, which we could use a little bit of help, but definitely defensively. He's a stud on defense. He has some health issues, yes, but Portland is clearly in rebuild mode. They are obviously holding on to to Malcolm Brogdon until the trade deadline, until desperate teams like maybe us need to make moves to improve their roster. I think he would fit in great. And I think that Portland would take Kuminga because he is a young guy on a short-term contract that could fit in with their other young guys, and they can build for the future around that. Does it solve all of our problems? I don't know. I kind of think we need a big man, and I don't think we need to sacrifice Kuminga in order to get another big man, but like, that's just my opinion. But like, if I'm looking for like a one for one type of move, Kuminga for Brogdon seems to make the most sense to me.
I vehemently reject that trade.
I totally get it. I reject that trade. Like I said at the beginning, I don't even want to have this conversation. I like Kuminga. I think we should keep him. But if for the sake of the podcast, we have to entertain it.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I mean, I can also just imagine like what happens to Moody if Brogdon's on this team. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But no, that's fair. I mean, I've had people on YouTube, like, you know, pine for a big, and I'm like, okay, cool. Who do you want? You know, because some guys may free up come trade deadline. There may be some team that will want a prospect, picks, Chris Paul's contract as the season goes on. But is there anyone on your radar that you're looking at that could free up, or that you think is a legit realistic target, or anyone that is currently a free agent or on the G League team? Because to me, it's like, I never wanted Dwight Howard, and I'm glad he's not on the team.
Yeah, I didn't either.
JaVale was interesting. People brought that up, but he picked the Kings. You know what I mean? Like, he just picked the Kings. And somebody also brings up Plumlee. I wanted Plumlee, but he quickly signed with I thought he was interesting. He quickly signed with
the Clippers
again. So, you know, I like you were saying, like, teams or fans always overestimate the draw of their team and also the their own assets, right? So like, I can't even remember any, like, so many just ridiculous trade ideas that we've heard over the or just fandom in general, where it's like, oh, let's trade, you know, pennies for $100. But is there anybody that you can think of? Because I actually don't have anyone, to be honest. I don't have any centers.
So Rob Williams, before he got hurt, was another one. Again, with, because to me, it's not about like, just in general, like, looking for players around the league. It's also looking for players on teams, or teams are willing, are looking to move these guys to improve, to change whatever it is about their roster they're trying to change. The Blazers are clearly in rebuild mode. They want young guys. So you can trade some of our young guys or our picks for some of their guys that just don't really fit. Rob Williams was one of those guys until he got hurt. Not on that train anymore. Free agent wise, Montrezl Harrell is still a free agent out there. I think he would be an interesting fit on our team. He is not quite a center, but he is a big man. He is aggressive. He is an enforcer. He is physical. And I think that he could be an interesting second unit piece, and he can score when you need him to. But other than that, I mean, no, I mean, like, I was on the JaVale McGee hype too, but yeah, like you said, he picked Sacramento. For whatever reason, he picked Sacramento. So,
I want to ask you, cause I wanted to talk about this last week. I know it came out last week, but like, you know, the whole, you know, the Draymond Gobert thing, but I wanted to ask if you had any thoughts on what Steve Kerr said the day after in his pregame presser against the Thunder in that first game. He called Draymond's actions inexcusable after defending them the night before. Did you have any thoughts on that? Because kind of a change of tune slightly from previous comments on
Draymond. I agree. Draymond, you know, it's getting exhausting defending him as a Warrior fan. I don't condone most of these actions. And like, dude, I worked for a company who made a documentary about him, and like, it's on Amazon. It's called The Sessions, about him working with Deepak Chopra on like anger management and trying to be better. And 2 days after that documentary came out was when he punched Jordan Poole in the face. So it was like, this guy, he went through anger management training with one of the most famous Zen person in the world, who, I mean, if he can't fix him, I don't know who can. And it's just like, I love the guy, but his lack of self-awareness is a little bit like, I think that caters into his like physical nature. And I don't like Rudy Gobert. Do I want to choke the guy? No. Like, it's just, I get, and he was defending Steph. Or, I mean, sorry, Clay. But the way he went about it was not the right way. Don't choke him out. Like, just kind of get in between him. But I don't know. I mean, maybe he was just trying to send a message to next time, to where it's like, you better like fear me now. And maybe it'll work. Who knows? I you know, I can't get inside the brain of that man. He baffles, he confuses me. But No, I'm not down with the violence ever. So I wasn't down with it when he punched Jordan Poole last year. I'm not down with it. What did he chokes Rudy Gobert this year?
Yeah, like I actually was like, I respected that the fact that he was defending a teammate.
Yeah, 1,000%.
And you know, I guess I can see from his angle, he saw like Gobert, maybe thought he was getting Clay in a similar chokehold or whatever, or a headlock.
Yeah, but I think Shaq is just really tall. About that night on Inside the NBA, like Shaq was making the claim, like, well, Gobert like choked him out first, so like he's just pulling him off. And then Chuck was like, no, he's not. And then they showed like a video of Chuck doing it to Larry Bird back in the 80s. Just like, and it just completely contradicted him. But
yeah. Man, I love Chuck. But you know, it was just that Gobert, I think, is tall. And so when he like he put his arms on Clay, it was like up around his neck. I loathe Gobert.
Same.
I've said that for a while. He's one of my most loathed players in the NBA. Also, Corey Joseph is as well.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I've just always hated his game, but now we got him. Woo!
My buddy Xavier Gomez, shout out to Xavier if he's checking this out or listens to it. He also hates him, and he immediately after that happened, we would text in our group chat about like how much he was satisfied that happened to Rudy Gobert.
yeah, and I think for Draymond, like, and what Kerr said. You know, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds on last season, but it's like, it was almost like, it was very awkward to me because he seemed to be pausing a lot, and Kerr is a great talker and he has his talking points all the time. And it felt like he was in his mind trying to find the words that would be on message for seeing all the replays and after the fact and the suspension and not creating waves externally, but then also not creating waves internally, not wanting to say the wrong thing that might kind of get aggregated anti-Draymond or something like that. But it's interesting because I do think that they gave him a pass and they enabled him a lot last season. And this verbiage of, you know, we're going to give Draymond the tools or help him not to, you know, the violence and all that stuff. So, you know, I found that interesting and hopefully there's fewer waves down the road. You know, there's going to be something, but
yeah,
there's always the Warriors need him. The Warriors need him more than before in a lot of ways, because they don't have the enforcer types or like just like the dudes who are just like vocal. They don't have David West.
They don't have Zaza, they don't have Andre Iguodala. They don't have Zaza. They don't have those guys on this team anymore. Yeah,
you know, and you know, it is what it is. And what, Draymond has one more game suspension and then
no, he's only done three so far, right? Because that
really, it's only been three. Didn't he get, is it two OKC games? And then the Houston game.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. So it happened on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Two OKC games. So he has two more. So
okay,
after the Spurs more. Playing the tournament game on Friday, he'll be good to go.
Great. Yeah. So against Sabonis and the Kings.
Oh, dude, what's your opinion on the in-season tournament real quick? Sorry for the sidebar. But
in-season tournament, I hear a lot of people call it play-in. I heard it on a podcast earlier. Yeah. I think you said it earlier. But you know, I couldn't care less, but I'm entertained by it. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
it's I didn't realize, I knew it would be like blended into the season, but I thought it would be continuous. I didn't think it would be like, okay, this counts as a tournament game. This counts as a tournament game. Yeah. I'm fine with it. You know, like it adds a little bit of intrigue. And then you're going to start seeing people be like, oh, this is the first team ever to win the in-season tournament and the finals, you know, and the title, you know what I mean? It's going to just turn into a thing. I don't mind it. It's marketing. It's to get interest back in the beginning of the season. And it gives
the
team something to
for. I'm convinced they're trying to sell this package to a streamer. Like, hey, you can have the in-season tournament games. Like Netflix, you can have these in-season tournament games if you want them. Like, I'm a big fan because I am a European soccer fan. So, and European soccer does the same way. It's not continuous. It's just like, all right, here's Group A play, one game. A month later, Group A play. You know, like a group play again, and it lasts all season long. The courts are distracting. Not a huge fan of that, but I get why they're doing it because it's a marketing tool. It's, you see that court and it starts the conversation. I was out at a bar with friends 2 weeks ago watching the games on Friday, and friends who were in town, they live in Canada, and they asked like, what's going on with the court? I'm like, oh, it's the in-season tournament. Oh, what's that? And, you know, and it just starts this whole conversation. So it's doing exactly what they want. But as a basketball fan who knows about the in-season tournament, it's distracting, but like they're not going to stop doing it because it just promotes it, just the conversation about the court.
Yeah, and I think the court, yeah, exactly. It's a marketing thing. When you see highlights, you're like, oh, that was an in-season tournament game.
Yeah,
you
know exactly. I
mean? When Draymond choked Gobert, that was an in-season tournament game. We'll always remember that. The first in-season tournament game at Chase Center.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, okay, out of these guys, who do you think is most likely to introduce or induct Draymond Green to the Hall of Fame? Steph, LeBron, Steve Kerr, Coach Izzo, or Rudy Gobert?
it's definitely Steph. Maybe Coach Izzo, maybe both. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I think
I think they only made the Elite Eight, right? They didn't go all that far on that team, so maybe not.
Oh, you know, I stopped following college basketball when Draymond was at that point, but like,
okay,
I know they made it to the Elite Eight though. They may have made. Did they make a Final Four?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Okay. Well, you know, that's that. You know, one random thought is like ESPN made this list of the top 25 under 25 recently, and you know, list or list, but I'm kind of revisiting a topic from earlier in this pod, but like it bugs me that nobody on the Warriors is on that list. I don't expect anyone right now on the Warriors to be on that list, but like they had three lottery picks, and to me it's an indictment of like the fact that, you know, they didn't let these guys get a little bit more run, that we can't see what they could have been. And that's the disappointment to me. Cause I think
Podziemski has not emerged yet though. So maybe he will be in the next version of that list.
Yeah. You know, one day I always wanted to make like a something under something. Maybe one day I'll make the, you know, 75 under 75 list or something like that. any other final thoughts or opinions? Oh, here's one thing. It's Thanksgiving in a couple days. What are you thankful for from this season or this Warriors team thus far?
The point God, Chris Paul. I am all in on the Chris Paul train. Like, and like I said, like for listeners out there, I know I keep promoting it, but please go check out my piece. I worked really hard on it, hence why I know all these numbers that I'm throwing at Patrick right now on this podcast. It's the second best player rankings. I will just spoil. Chris Paul is at the top for a lot of reasons. One of them being how his leadership, his that impact on the team, what he does with the players around him, how he's improved everybody. And like the point God experiment is – it's already proven itself right, in my opinion. I'm all in on it. So I hope that we can win a championship and get him his first championship. And I hope that he puts a big middle finger to the Clippers and the Hornets and the Suns. And he, I guess you don't do that in the NBA Hall of Fame, but I was gonna say goes in the NBA Hall of Fame as a Warrior. But I guess you don't do that.
Oh, no.
That's only in, I think that's only in the Baseball Hall of Fame that you do that. You go in with a certain team. Yeah.
But yeah, because I think it's literally because in the Baseball Hall of Fame, I could be wrong.
You put put a team on your hat.
Put a cap.
Yeah.
Or you could be like Rob Lowe and just have NFL.
I'm not gonna lie, I almost bought that hat just as like a
basketball.
I saw that.
I think I'm just thankful for like most of the discussion, or pretty much all the discussion is on the court. They're trying to figure out on the court
stuff. Yeah.
You know, it's not any extracurriculars, and that's what I'm always going to be thankful for this season. Who do you think was the Warriors, or you must have an opinion because you wrote an article about this. Who was the Warriors' second best player last season?
I struggled to do that, to think of one last year, is kind of what inspired me to write this piece in the first place. So I think beginning of the season, it was Jordan Poole. And then like after he became like ball stopper, ball hogger, Jordan Poole, and like, you know, you could argue like all of Kuminga's frustrations and like a little bit of Moody's frustrations of like their roles, like changing, is directly altered or directly influenced by Jordan Poole and how he is a high usage, high on ball hog player, because he kind of stunted their growth by not like you look at his assists, like they're so low last season. Like he just was not dishing the ball out. So like when he started doing that, it made it tough. And like Draymond Green had such a surgence in the second half of the season, especially like on the defensive side. So I think that it was like split between those two guys.
Yeah.
What about you? Could you name one off the top of your head?
I could not, because as you said, like it kept fluctuating. Like you could say when for a stretch it was Clay. You know what I mean? And
yeah, it was for a little bit.
But he was like just chucking. He was just putting up like offensive numbers. Mm-hmm. So it's safe to say. Like you said, it was muddled. It was muddled just like the rest of the season was, you know what I mean? And be like,
yeah.
Oh, you know, just, it was James Wiseman. Now, have you been following Wiseman and Poole at all?
I've been following Poole based on Twitter, because Twitter just eats him up and spits him out. And it's like, I feel a little bit bad for the guy, but like he's doing it to himself. Like did you see the clip of him? Like he's pissed off going into a timeout and he's just not paying attention in the huddle and just tells his coach like to F off. Like, dude, what are you like? Come on, man. Like that just screams a guy who like knew that he came into that team and the team was built around him. And he just got this major, like, it's not even a chip on a shoulder. It's just like this major like cockiness to him. It's just kind of weird.
Yeah. I mean, I was pulling for the guy because I thought he got a little bit of a raw deal. I thought the punch kind of screwed him up.
Yeah.
And maybe it did, and maybe it still has. But like, you know, I think that I didn't like his game last season. I've talked about the ad nauseum, and I'd see flashes where he'd get like 11 assists in one game last year. But he the offense prancing, heat check, pool party BS, I couldn't roll with that. It's particularly because the defensive liabilities and stuff. I was pulling for him. But what I see is like, you know, when I highlight his stat line, it's because it's like showing that, not necessarily him per se, but it's like how much the turnovers and how much Chris Paul helps the Warriors this season. I think that in terms of the of beating up on Poole, is like, man, this dude, I mean, like you said, he's doing to himself. He believes his own hype. Mm-hmm. And let's face facts, like it's not like when Gilbert Arenas left the Warriors to go to Gilbert Arenas was dang good, right? Jordan Poole is maybe third, fourth best player on a contender, you know. Mm-hmm. So it is what it is. And then every now and then I peek at the Wiseman box score, but that's not even,
he just doesn't get a lot of minutes, man. Yeah. And I, you know, like I honestly, like, you know, who talks about a lot is Bill Simmons on his podcast. And like, he kind of keeps an eye on him, and he just talks about like how he's just, you know, even in the minutes that he gets, he just kind of, he's basketball wise. I don't know about him personally. Basketball wise, he's just very raw and immature. And like, he didn't get the time to develop that because even his like college season was cut short. So it's like, he's just kind of just the circumstances of him in his career just have not helped him out.
Yeah. It's just, he just doesn't have enough, like, he's just got a lot of bad things happen in his career. Not ideal. Always pulling for the guy. But when I peek in and watch him play, you know, you could tell that he's still not there. He doesn't have the dog in him.
Yeah.
He doesn't have enough basketball in his muscle, like in his, you know, in his basketball existence to have gotten to, like, imagine if he was had played in a regular college system for all these years, how much basketball, how many pictures, as they say, he would have seen.
Yeah.
But all it is now is just like drills and and lifting weights. But yeah, it is what it is. But cool, man. Well, thank you, Chris Madrigal from the Town Tailgate Podcast. You can find Chris on Twitter at Chris24KMagic, which I can never remember.
it's like the Bruno Mars song, like 24 Karat Magic. Like, I just try to. My last name is Madrigal, so I just try to, like, just, you know, it's.
I figured that out. I figured
it was
out
unique.
That
it's thing. Better than just like at Chris54321 or something like that, or whatever love names it was. Like, no one else had it, so I have it on like all my platforms. It's pretty great. All my social.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. It's important to be branded across all platforms. As us content creators.
Yeah. Me and my co-host Julio, we're gonna do something for the offseason for the A's. If you're an A's fan or something like that. And I'm working on a piece also for the A's, kind of comparing, because their owner is cheap, comparing what a championship winning roster would have cost them, their roster from a couple years ago, what it would have cost them this season. So look out for that.
Cool, man. Any other places? So check out his article, Chris' article, on fansfirstsports.com, right? Mm-hmm. That's the URL.
Yeah.
Check out his podcast for sure and find him on Twitter. Cool, man. Well, thanks for coming on. Have a good holiday.
Yeah, you too, man.
All right. Well, that is another episode of the Oakland Warriors podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Feel free to hit me up on Twitter at Patrick E. Pino or at Oakland Warriors. Check out our YouTube channel where you can watch this episode, youtube.com/Oakland Warriors. Check us out at oaklandwarriors.com and be sure to tell your fellow Warrior fan friends to tune in and listen. The Oakland Warriors podcast is produced by National Film Society. And if you're so inclined, please do leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you want to leave us a nice review saying good stuff about the show on Apple Podcasts, that would be hugely, hugely appreciated, and it would be very, very helpful. Thanks. That's it.
Music in this episode provided by Paper Sun. Special thanks to Paul Amardo for production support. See you next time, and go Dubs.